Thank you, Mayu.
As human beings, we have the ability to become aware. Now, we notice things, and in the process, we consider and we contemplate, and then we form judgments and reach conclusions. The thing is this, we like to be well informed. We want to know what is going on around us, with our family and our neighbors, what is happening in our country, and also out there in the world. We want to learn of advances in technology and science, the latest in art and music. Being aware, we feel that now we are on top of things. Taking it all in, nothing will get by our keen eye of perception and discernment. Now, having received in this way, the question then becomes, what do we do with this information? We admit that some of what we hear, some of what we see, is not something that we want to dwell on. When we read of man's inhumanity to his fellow man, we don't even want to go there. And then reading about disease, climate change, tornadoes, hurricanes, earthquakes, may leave us feeling a little anxious and concerned. You see, regardless of the news of the day, our response will be personal, interpreting from our point of view. We rely on our experience and our established beliefs for understanding and explanation. So to look at life differently would require an attitude adjustment on our part. While we do want to stay well informed, we also discover that some of what we hear about, some of what we read about, is excessive, way beyond our interest and our need to know. I mean, some of it does not even apply to us. So why do we waste our time forming opinions, judgments about things that we do not even want to know about? Perhaps we should be a little more selective in how we process our information. Maybe we could be a little more discriminating in our method of listening. We do have the ability to sift, to pick, and to choose, discarding what is not worthy of our attention. Now, in our process of elimination, we have to consider all the various ways in which we receive that information. So let us begin with the internet, the television, radio, newspapers, and smartphones. Some of what we learn comes way of gossip, eavesdropping, or that invisible grapevine. Now, in all of these instances, we have the ability to shut it off, close it down, or tune it out. In our need to be well informed, we must use righteous judgment, discerning what is true, what is false, and above all, what is passing and what is lasting. Now, working in this way, we develop a system of measurement. We notice that those changing scenes of humanhood, they come and they go. We may consider them among the passing. Now, it is true that even though what is passing does not last, it does have a purpose, perhaps a lesson to give. There are times when the lesson lingers long after its cause has left us. A lesson given should be a lesson learned. And so to this I say, take the meat, the essence from the experience, and leave that empty shell. In our process of measurement, we also discover what is lasting. Now, what is lasting is what is true to life. What is true to life does not expire and pass on. It belongs to eternity. What is based on principle belongs to eternity, and it never changes. Its truth was the same yesterday, is today, and will be so on into the future. What is true of principle is also true of life. For instance, let's take the principle of mathematics. The principle of mathematics, it remains the same. Now, if we happen to make an error in our addition or subtraction, we do not ask principle to, would you please correct my mistake? Nor does mathematics change its principle to accommodate our error. To find the correct answer, we must return to principle, cooperating with what has been established and put in place to support the value that the principle assigns to its numbers. Now, much of what we learn, we discover by way of experience. For instance, prices have gone up, no doubt about it. Now, we may not have paid close attention when the various media first reported this information. However, we certainly did discover it when we went to the grocery store or put gas in the car. Now it becomes personal. And so our response is to judge, measuring one thing against the other, assigning value to our purchasing power. Do you see what we have done? Even in the time of changing scenes of humanhood, we have established a degree of measurement, determining that one thing is better than another thing. We assign value to our relationships, considering one more important than another. Measurement assigned to the changing scenes of humanhood is not governed by principle. There is nothing to support and maintain that which is passing. Principle, it supports and maintains what is true to life. Again, the question remains, what is real? What is unreal? What is false? And what is absolute? Judging the world according to its opposites is not true to life. Even though we exist in this world of manifestation, we want our judgment to be true of us. Is there a principle that governs us? Is there a deeper experience to life than what appears on the surface? We reason that if something greater than we are governs us, surely we could feel a sense of security and stability. Therefore, we ask exactly, what is the greater satisfaction? What brings true contentment? And exactly, what is that sense of well-being? Well, let us see how this works when we put it into practice in our time of daily living. For instance, we enter a particular line of work, one that seems to fit our interest and our temperament. We also have all of those skills necessary to do the work. And so everything tells us that we will be successful. Eventually, we do find what we consider the perfect job, certain that it will meet all of our needs and our expectations. Now, this is measuring life according to what appears on the surface. And as we settle into that job, we begin to look a little closer. And we ask, is this truly my life's work? Is this my talent and my contribution? Does it bring personal satisfaction? Do I look forward to going to work in the morning? What am I feeling at the end of the day? The yardstick that we use to measure the experience determines the answer to these questions. Now, with attention given to what is lasting, we do enjoy a fuller measure of life. What is lasting is governed by that which is greater than we are. When we obey its direction, we hear that still small voice say, "Well done, my good and faithful servant." This is the true measure. And yes, to allow it to lead us is our life's work. Now, it is true that some individuals find a degree of success living on the surface of life, giving value to what one might consider the purchasing power, with its reward of material things. They might not be aware there is a deeper realm of existence, and so they settle for a lesser degree of what they call happiness. They view life through tunnel vision, considering only what applies to them in a personal way. They spend time pursuing all of those individual wants and desires, seeking a larger and greater array of trinkets and baubles. Now, it's true, these things do bring a momentary degree of satisfaction. However, it is fleeting. Remember, there is no principle available to support what is passing. Those who are interested in a deeper response to life have discovered that they must go beyond themselves, discovering those inner qualities, the ones of contentment, serenity, and refuge. Inner qualities are true to life, not bothered or touched by the storms of surface living. Now, we cannot actually put a price tag on these possibilities, because you see, these things are not dependent on our purchasing power. Purchasing power, it belongs to the world, with its bargains, its sales, and discounted goods. These things have their place in a world of barter and trade. However, they are not a true measure of life. To go a little deeper, we must rise above the lure of market value. Again, I speak of the greater self. Now, the lifted eye of discernment reveals there is something greater than we are, something that is greater than that personal self. And remember, the one willing to look beyond themselves could be considered religious. To find and live according to this greater self is the true measure of life. Now, calling someone religious indicates a belief in God or deity. We give value to what we consider greater than we are. Focusing attention on inner qualities, we include love, peace, joy, and harmony. These are inner attributes assigned to the higher self. Now, in our study of religion, we consider the Bible the authority on religious things. We start in the beginning with that book of Genesis, the one that speaks of creation. We are particularly interested in that part that says, God created man in his own image and of his likeness. Intuitively, we know that it's speaking about us. Then there is that verse in Jeremiah 2:21 that says, yet I planted thee a noble vine, holy, a right seed. Now this speaks of deeper purpose and significance. Surely to know us in this way would be the true measure of life. Now when we received and accepted information about life and about us from the world of daily events, we did notice a corresponding reaction in our conditions and our circumstances. And so we reason. Receiving information about life and about us from the revelation of inner being, then surely there too would be a corresponding reaction in our conditions and our circumstances. For many, many years, we lived as that human being. It is now time to live as that one made in his image and of his likeness. God's attributes of love, peace, joy, and harmony, they exist in us. In order for them to permeate our conditions and circumstances, we must find a way for them to escape. Consciousness is the seat of activity. God constitutes individual consciousness. And the purpose of meditation is to go within, to open out a way for infinity to flow forth from within. Meditation, we talk about it a lot. It is that time when we still our thoughts, quiet our emotions. We enter the holy sanctuary of inner being, alone with God. It is there that we are consciously one with our Father, with his spiritual qualities, attributes, and inherences. While this is the true form of communion, for many individuals, meditation remains a bit of a mystery. This is not the way of prayer taught by many Western Orthodox churches. The thing is this, most priests and ministers do encourage their parishioners to pray to God. They really do. But that would be to pray to a God up in heaven or up in the sky or definitely somewhere where they are not. There is a separation, God up there and me down here. There's no personal relationship. Praying to a far-off God is not the same as walking and talking with God in the deep sanctuary of inner being. And of course, that is the point. If God is spirit and must be worshipped in spirit and in truth, then we must go to him as that spiritual being, as the one of the higher identity. You know, his beloved child, Christ. We must not look upon this act of stillness as merely a religious practice or discipline. Time spent in the silent place of meditation is the most practical step toward harmony. Harmony translates as fulfillment and satisfaction, as within, so without. Consciously one with God, peace, joy, love, they flow from us, harmonizing our world and everything in it, regardless of what is happening out there. We call this living spiritually. Now, with the soul in charge, the mental and physical aspects of being are subservient, obeying that voice of authority which says, I am God, and beside me there is none else. Truly, if we are ever to know mental, physical, spiritual, or economic harmony, we will know it only by drawing it forth from our own consciousness. There is no other reality for us or our fellow man. I am describing spiritual consciousness. Spiritual consciousness is ours to the degree that it has awakened to the errors of the human mind and has come to know that there is not God and man. God is manifest as man. No division and no separation. As we begin to realize more and more clearly that we are one with the Father, and all that the Father has is ours, we are building our consciousness of the real self. We are dying to all that constitutes human beliefs, and we're being reborn into our original pure state of Christ consciousness. This is the true measure of life. And this is what it takes. When we enter God's presence as his spiritual child, we must put away all that belongs to the child of dust. We must cross out and release those thoughts and beliefs that claim the identity of material form. The lure of mental work, it's very strong. However, let us remember, the wisdom of God cannot be imparted to or through or by the human mind. What is of flesh cannot know or understand what is of spirit, what is of God. Now, one of the most difficult challenges in laying hold of spiritual principles is to stop trying to fit them into physical dimensions. This is why there must be an activity of release. The Bible calls it dying daily. Now, the act of dying to some erroneous belief or pattern frees us from fear, anger, resentment, judgment, and condemnation. Even those emotions that we consider good, they must go. Because you see, they shrink in comparison to the good that the Father has prepared for us. Now we ask, how long should this dying go on? Well, that's hard to say. The Bible does not say how long it will take, it just says daily. Well, I suppose the daily could go on forever. Perhaps there is a dying daily forever. Please do not be tempted to measure yourself according to how well you think you are doing. Just be grateful that you have been given some measure of spiritual light and you know you are eternal, and that you are some degree further along the path of dying daily and being reborn into the true measure of life. Keep it up every day, so that each day you die to some measure of human belief of restriction and limitation, and each day you awaken to some activity of spiritual awareness. Dying daily to concepts and patterns, we eventually find us in that place of give no thought. And in the absence of thought, we know who we are. We are God's child. There's no doubt. There is none else. So this morning we have the opportunity to become still, enter our closet, shut the door, and be alone with God. Would you join me now in our closing meditation? As we close our worship service, we claim a moment of silence. In the silence, we are in God's presence. This is a time of serenity, a time of peace. God fills this moment with every good thing. I am in the midst of you. I never leave you. Think on those things that are true, pure, and of good report. Sing praises and be glad. Come into my presence with thanksgiving. Do not be dismayed. Seek wisdom above all else. And in getting wisdom, also get knowledge and understanding. These commands are given to the heart, to the receptive attitude eager to obey his call to be about his business. I have sent you into this world to love one another as I have loved you. Go forth, preach the gospel, heal the sick, and above all, comfort those who mourn. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you is recognition of oneness. We are all one in the household of God. The rule of life is to lift our eyes on high and behold only Him. Amen. May the Lord bless you and keep you. May He cause His light to shine upon you and be gracious unto you. Turn within, acknowledge Him, so that He may lift your consciousness and give you His peace. Amen.
Please stand.